BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
In 2008, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And that was the year I got to know Joseph Conteloube. It was a strange, often terrifying and rather unreal time, finding a lump, going to the doctor, and eventually finding myself lying on a table while the diagnostic tests were going on, the faces around me growing graver and graver, and the nurse squeezing my hand harder and harder. No one had to say the word cancer to me. Their expressions were enough. I felt out of control. It was as if I were falling down a mountain, slipping from a well-known path, bumping through the thistles, rocks and brambles, falling, bruised and grazed and bleeding, and being slammed into a massive boulder at the bottom. I'd gone from being a busy radio presenter, curator of concerts and festivals, working regularly in Norway as well as this country, to being a statistic, one of the nearly 50,000 people diagnosed with breast cancer in the UK every year. Crumpling, folding in on myself at the thought of having to tell my children. Life changed completely, and what lay ahead was a cocktail of fear, pain, worry. But there was also an unexpected gift that came with that. The most extraordinary support, love, trust and honesty from so many people, not to mention the skills and compassion of my team of consultants, doctors and nurses. During those first few days after the official diagnosis, the telephone rang constantly. People came to visit, sent text messages. My house was like a florist's showroom, and I was deeply touched by a non-stop cascade of cards and letters, which I keep to this day. I was overwhelmed not just by kindness and generosity, but by the feelings of others which spilled out. I was at a crisis point, and that seemed to allow friends and colleagues to open up to me about themselves in a way I would probably never have imagined. Being forced to confront my own, maybe sooner than expected, death somehow stripped away the trivia and allowed heartfelt honesty and love to become the backbone of relationships. Nestling inside me are the very personal stories and thoughts people told me then. Not always people I'd known that well, unburdening themselves of hopes and dreams, of sorrows and joys. My life in music as a radio presenter and curator has meant I know lots of musicians and composers across many genres, classical, electronica, folk music, jazz. You'll know what I mean if you're a Late Junction listener. They sent me music, sometimes something they'd written themselves, sometimes something they'd chosen for me. The day before I was going into theatre for an 8-hour operation, I received the most beautiful, gentle Sami lullaby. A DVD of Beethoven's symphonies arrived from someone who didn't even know that Beethoven was my first love. People sent me poems and quotations that had sustained them through life, sometimes in thoughtfully chosen cards, sometimes just a simple text message. And then one day in that strange, scary time between the first exploratory operations and what would turn out to be 12 days in hospital, Joseph Conteloube arrived at my front door. As I said, I was now seeing so many people in a whole new light. They were sharing things with me that were precious to them in a way which made me feel not only valued, but also humbled that they put their trust in me, people from all areas of my life. The Conteloube CD which dropped onto my doormat was a particular surprise, because the person who'd sent it to me was someone I associated not with classical music, but much more with a heavier end of jazz, rock or electronica. There was a simple message. This recording of the songs of the Auvergne has always meant something to me, and I wanted you to have it. I was touched and intrigued. How often in all those years as a radio presenter had I introduced that music? This is the Baliero from the Songs of the Auvergne by Joseph Conteloube. But to be honest, I'd never really thought very deeply about it. Bartok was my classical folk hero, and I love his earthy yet passionate approach to folk song collecting. Conteloube had always seemed a bit too, well, pretty to me, too many flutes and harps for my liking. Conteloube came with me, like a sort of guardian angel, into hospital for that unexpectedly prolonged stay. The night before my long, long, long theatre date, I listened as the voice of Victoria de los Angeles floated and skipped, rang out across the valleys and called the cattle home. Her effortless conversational style, purring in the Auvergne dialect of the Occitan language, was exquisite and beguiling. I'd discovered the beauty and wit of Occitan languages through the insanely brilliant and very, how shall I put it politely, rough and risque male choral group Le Croix de la Plaine. But now I was listening to it with the voice of a young girl walking in the hills of the Auvergne, breathing in the clear mountain air, daydreaming, flirting, crying, telling her feelings to the stones underfoot, the birds flying above, her sheep scrambling over the streams and rocks. This man, may I call you Joseph? We've spent so long together. This composer who captured the sound of the breezes in the trees, the shimmering heat of the sun on the rocks, the scampering of the wildlife in his meticulous, colourful and loving orchestrations. The first couple of days after the operation were tough. I was sick on morphine, hardly able to move, having to be fed and washed. I hated it. And as soon as I could gather enough strength of spirit and body, I resolved, despite the drips and drains and tubes entangling my body, to turn my corner of the ward into something I could feel alive in if I was going to have to stay there for a while. Under the hospital regime, I was breakfasted by 7:30, with hours and hours stretching ahead of me. I was determined to somehow grasp hold of the person I was and not the patient number on my identity tag. I spread a colourful sarong on my bed and immersed myself in music through those long, often lonely, hospital mornings. It was in this hospital ward that I learned about Joseph's passion for folk music, which he believed was the true expression of people's identity. The songs of the peasants, he said, very often reach the level of the purest art and feeling and expression. Of course, he didn't write the English word peasant, which seems almost patronising. He wrote the beautiful, musical French word paysan, people of the country, people of the land. I discovered that he, like my beloved Bartok, went off with a tape recorder into the hills of his native Auvergne and recorded tunes which came from the very souls of those he listened to and talked with. It was an important expression of humanity, and Joseph became a champion of folk music, giving lectures and talks, and using the radio to share this music with others. I felt we were getting to know each other better and better. He was into folk music and radio. What a perfect match we were. I pictured him striding out into the hills, the lush greenery of summer masking the landscape's ancient volcanic outcrops, a geology of passion and turmoil. In my mind, I was there too on the paths, clambering over the rocks, stopping to marvel at a delicate flower. In my heart, I was in my own Auvergne, the Shropshire Hills, where the curlew calls over the Long Mynd, following the stream down through Ashes Hollow, awed by the eerie wonder of Minton Batch. The distant bleating of lambs in springtime, somewhere a dog barking. Joseph got a lot of criticism for what he did. How could he possibly justify smothering these unaccompanied folk songs with a symphony orchestra? They are never unaccompanied, he'd reply. Do you not hear the wind, the birds, the water in the streams, the sounds of voices across the valleys? Out there, on the hills of the Auvergne, he was in the midst of nature's own symphony orchestra. I listened to the famous Baliero with its haunting melody, the shepherdess calling across the valley to the shepherd. You don't look as if you're having much fun. I'm running to find you. And down comes the rain as the piano nestles in with its falling raindrops. The flutes are the mountain breezes, and the oboe is a bird high in the sky. How could I have overlooked this magic, this sense of absolutely being part of nature all these years? I loved her sense of being on her own in the hills, and playing games and pretending she was someone else, someone grand perhaps. Joseph Conteloup gives her an orchestral backdrop of grandeur to match the awesome landscape in another song, Passo pel Prat, Come Through the Meadow. Sometimes he makes the voice battle with the instruments, like trying to catch your breath when the wind is gathering strength in the hills. The oboes and clarinets are birds darting in and out of the musical picture, but they're also earthy, like the local folk instruments. There are times in our lives when we have to sing our own lullabies. Soon, soon, sang Victoria de Los Angeles, sleep, sleep, like the Norwegian, souv, souv. And in the Brejarola, sleep eventually sidles in, like a cat slinking under the table. Surgery gave way to chemotherapy, and I imagined that the toxic substances they were pumping into me were the sea or the mountain streams filling me with the power of nature. The girl in the Auvergne was so often alone, and no matter how much comfort and support I had, my mind often played strange tricks on me, and I could identify with the sad songs too, when night cast its shadow and the birds had fallen silent. Rushed into hospital as an emergency with an infection that could have proved fatal, I was isolated and desolate. Here I am, deserted like the turtle dove who has lost its mate. I could hear Victoria de Los Angeles's voice in my head from the heartbreaking song Un Ojiento Posturo, A Pretty Shepherdess. The aim of chemotherapy is to save lives. Its methods can be brutal, and my white cell count had taken a battering with no front line of defence to combat an infection. I had the dreaded neutropenic sepsis. It was a busy hospital on a Saturday night, and they shut me away, because that's what they had to do. I later found a painting called The Island of Neutropenia via Sussex University's cancer research site by an artist who'd recently died, Michele Angelo Petrone, one of a set of simple but striking pictures that were kindled by his own response to his cancer experience, loss, fragility, pain and sorrow. Here was a lonely, wretched figure, slumped on a tiny remote island, overshadowed by a towering red tree which dripped with anguish. It reminded me of what it was like and how I had sobbed with loneliness. Somewhere in my head, I heard that Auvergne breeze, that bearing of the human soul, and I clung on to that raw humanity for all it was worth. People expect you to bounce back when treatment is finished, but it isn't like that for everyone, and the side effects sometimes change things forever. But I am glad to have experienced everything I've been through. Well, maybe not absolutely everything, because of the trusting and very real and human things I've been able to share with so many people, and that will never leave me. And as for me and Joseph, well, thanks to a simple act of human kindness and understanding, he's still by my side, every skipping, joyful, faltering step of the way.